Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now I'm joined in studio by Fionn Davenport, travel journalist extraordinaire, occasional author of travel guidebooks, which is what we are going to focus on this morning. I don't want to put you out of a job or a part of a job on the travel guidebook writing end of your career, but why would I need a guidebook nowadays if I wanted to travel somewhere? Surely my phone is going to do that job much better for me.
Good morning, Philip. You're not wrong. That is the uphill battle that guidebook authors or guidebook publishers have to face. I mean, when you look at them compared to all of the available internet information, they're bulky, they're expensive, they're mostly out of date. By the time you buy a guidebook, it's been researched a year and a half, 2 years ago. A lot of useless information, and I'm using air quotes around useless, and a lot of them lack personality compared to what you might get on a travel blog that's updated daily, if not weekly. But I would make the argument that they're far from obsolete. And while travel guides, they do have to contend with the universe of information available at the touch of a finger on your phone, they're still amongst the most reliable sources of information you're going to get for travel. And that's the ultimate selling point, which seems, I mean, to my earlier point, it seems obsolete, but it actually isn't. That reliability is all important.
Lonely Planets and Rough Guides are going to have been fact-checked to within an inch of their existence. Some blog written by some dude may have just actually been copied from some other dude on the internet be repeating the same mistakes.
And this isn't me beating up on bloggers, because there are some extraordinarily good bloggers and there's some very good blogs. But travel guidebooks do give you researched facts, and that's really important because, look, researching is hard, it's unglamorous, the history, the cultural facts, all of that useless information I alluded to earlier. And then practical information, the how-to, the opening hours on a weekend, but the seasonal opening hours, so these are shorter hours in winter. All of that information has to be researched, and that takes time, and it also, and key, it takes budget. Travel bloggers, they might glean a lot of it from Wikipedia. It doesn't work within the blogger model to spend a huge amount of time doing this research because, look, they're not going to beat academic sites. They're not going to beat the big guidebooks in terms of what they're really looking for is search rankings. And you can't monetize the traffic. You can't monetize what you're doing if you're going to spend an inordinate amount of time. And updating a guidebook takes months and months and months.
Which is actually brings me to one of the other things that makes you hanker after a guidebook. No pop-ups.
Well, that's another thing. So you're not getting ads constantly popping up. You're not getting stuff spat at you, because that's effectively what happens. And that's not the blogger's fault, but it's just the way the internet works. And it's also as well as this, it's you're not also getting regurgitated tips. And that's the key, because look, if you're a blogger, and again, I emphasize there are some excellent bloggers, but like how you work is research doesn't work for you in terms of as a way of making a living out. So blogger A visits somewhere for a couple of days, becomes an expert. Well, like most of travel journalists, we all do to a certain extent. And then they spit out the information. Blogger B is looking to do something similar. So they look at blogger A post and put out their own version and so on. So you get to blogger Z. And before you know it, you're getting that blogger A's information just regurgitated. So when you look at the lists, they're of like, say, I don't know, top 10 bars in Dublin, for instance. You're going to get virtually the exact same list over and over and over and over again.
And this is the point at which we should say that you have written for the Lonely Planet in the past. But so tell me, how is the process of what you're doing very different?
I think... Yes, and I have written for Lonely Planet, and it's not. I'm not here shilling for Lonely Planet, and you know, I'd be critical of guidebooks as well, but guidebooks have to be helpful to win you over. Like, in order to get you to part with your hard-earned money, and guidebooks are expensive. You know, there's no doubt. Like, you're going to fork out €15 or €20, whatever it is. If my guidebook or a guidebook that I've worked on isn't helpful to you, you won't buy it. Because what you'll do is you'll go into the bookshop and you go, yeah, I don't care about any of this stuff. So back on the shelf it goes. So I need for it to be helpful. And Whereas with blogs, what happens is that you can still get lots of readers and tons of money so long as you're high in the search rankings, because that's what Google will reward you. So it's not that you don't have to be helpful. As I said, the bloggers that I do know are dedicated to giving you helpful information, but it's not their primary concern in terms of if you're looking to monetize what you're doing. Whereas with guidebooks, that is absolutely the...
They have to be colourful. They have to be interesting. They have to attract your attention with something bright, shiny and sparkly, but they're not necessarily going to be in the position that you are to build on the information and the writing of many, many previous editions of a guide.
I mean, the other thing as well is, and look, we live in a world, and this isn't just for travel guide or travel blogs, it just happens in the internet. It's clickbaiting, and clickbaiting newspapers do it. Like, what we are vying for your attention in a universe where there are infinite number of voices all screaming at you, pay attention to me, pay attention to me. And the landscape we operate in, we media generally, is incredibly difficult as a result. But then what guidebooks don't do is you don't get like that, you know, I don't know, things of like the 10 most amazing things in the world. And you click into it and you realize it's like none of those things are amazing. You know, and look, that's just the way
of
it.
The other problem here is I keep my, as we used to call them, lonely guides and rough planets at home to remind myself of my backpacking youth. But they're doorstops, these books. You wouldn't bring them.
They are heavy and bulky. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And so one of the things that's happening with guidebook publishers, and it's across the board, is they recognize that. And so as a result, what's happening is you're getting, say, the next edition of X guidebook is going to be 20% smaller because we want it to be less bulky, or they want it to be less bulky.
You're making the print smaller, are you making the paper thinner? What are
you
doing?
What they're doing is they're culling a lot of that kind of useless information that makes for a great read on the train. So those long sections about history or culture or a deep dive essay into something that's happening somewhere.
Is that not a pity?
It's a terrible shame. Absolutely. And look, guidebooks are not immune to the realities of the modern world at all. Like guidebooks, and I say this again as a long time Lonely Planet author. I've written, I don't know how many Lonely Planet guides at this stage, but it's absolutely true. It happens across the board. However, the rate at which you're still going to find some of that kind of nice train ride information, you will still find it in a guidebook, whereas you won't find it on a travel blog. You'll have to look for academic sources. You'll have to look elsewhere, which isn't to say that you can't. You can sit on the train and Google on your phone.
We're talking here about the disruption to guidebooks by bloggers. I wonder, are bloggers going to be disrupted themselves by the fact that I can go on to Google Maps and I can find out exactly when the place that I want to go to is open or not? I don't need to go anywhere near a blog or even a guidebook.
So you're absolutely right. And if I'm looking for, it depends on what kind of traveller you are. If you're the traveller that, like, look, I don't need flower or detail or a lot of colourful prose, just give me the details, then you're absolutely right. I can look at it on Google Maps, or I can Google the thing and Google will helpfully give me the opening hours for that place, etc., and how much it might cost to get into it. So if that's all the information you need, that's all the information you'll be looking for. However, if, like me, I like to read stuff. I like to get into things. I like to get, and also I like, and opinions are a funny thing. My opinions are no more relevant than 1,000 other bloggers or writers. But what I value, those writers that I like and who I trust, who are, make me laugh or give me a sense of, like, in travel writing, whether you're blogging or writing guidebooks or writing for newspapers, the key now is that put me in the experience. Don't just describe that, you know, this restaurant has X. Write it in such a way as I'm going to either have a yin to go there, or describe it in such a way as, like, I feel like I'm reading this and I feel like I'm enjoying those things.
Is there a danger as well with the popularity of these blogs that you end up standing in a queue outside a recommended restaurant behind a whole bunch of people also looking at the same online recommendation on their phone?
This is the accusation that's been levelled against Lonely Planet for decades now, and that is particularly in other parts of the world outside of Europe. So, for example, Lonely Planet really made its reputation writing guidebooks to Asian destinations, whether it's, you know, it's Southeast Asia on a Shoestring, which is their first guide, but all the country guides. And And what those dedicated travellers who are really looking for off the beaten path destinations, etc., what they pull their hair out in despair is that once you get mentioned in the Lonely Planet guide, is everybody goes to that little cafe or everybody goes to that thing. And so Lonely Planet, rather than being a force for good and exploration, become a sense of like, look, it's just you just can't fight that thing where... Exactly that. You get 1,000 people all queuing up because I read it in the Lonely Planet guide. Now, Lonely Planet in their defense, and Rough guides and Moon guides and DKI witness guides, all of them in their defense will say, look, the key word here is guide. We're not the Bible. We're not telling you these are the places you absolutely only have to go to.
But that is to ignore the fact that the impact has been hundreds and hundreds of kids on the Koh San Road watching Hollywood movies and eating burgers and fries rather than doing anything more culturally appropriate.
But at the same time, isn't that human nature? And maybe less so now, I think, that where the world is much smaller by virtue of technology. But I certainly, when I started travel writing, before the internet, before mobile phones, you were kind of out in the middle of the wilderness and all you had with you was the guidebook. And that relationship between the traveller or the holidaymaker and the guidebook has changed for obvious reasons since. And so... guidebooks, although they're pivoting and trying to adjust to this new world, still offer a version of that safety, or maybe safety is the wrong word, but that kind of reassurance.
Okay. Offer me some guidebook recommendations other than...
I'm not going to say, look, I think like there's a series of 12 called of like Destination Like a Local, Dublin Like a Local. And I think they're doing 12, maybe 14 cities. I think they're terrific. They're all written by local resident authors. Moon Guides, DKI Witness, I mentioned, if you're looking for beautiful photographs and inspirational copy, things like that. Look, Lonely Planet are the world's biggest guidebook sellers. They don't need me to shill for them. Rough Guide are great still, I think. Moon Guides.
Was there ever any difference between Lonely Planet and Rough Guides?
Well, yeah. So Lonely Planet, their traditional specialty was Asia and the Far East. Rough Guides were excellent because they were an English company, whereas Lonely Planet were an Australian company. Mm-hmm. So they were very good on European destinations. But all of these distinctions have kind of been lost in the weeds over the years. What I would say is that any guidebook you're looking, it's the depth of budget they have to pay you for good research. That's what makes a good guidebook. And if the publisher is willing to invest that level of money, which is really time and expertise, you're going to get a good return. If you're trying to cut corners and say, look, we want you to update an Ireland guide for whoever, but all we're going to pay you is what we want it done in a month. Fact is they just don't add up. You're not going to get a great guide.
And my personal top tip is go out and buy the doorstop of a book and photograph the pages
that are relevant to you.
Maybe I do have a future outside of here doing something else. Thank you very much, Fionn Davenport. Our parenting expert, David Coleman, is going to join me on Monday's programme to offer advice on emotional regulation, fear of rats in the attic, and teenagers lacking motivation, among other topics. If you have questions for David, you can email todaycb@rte.ie. Right now, though, ahead of the gathering, let's take another break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.